You're now listening to the Legends Lingo Podcast. Here are your hosts, Al Powder and Maddie D.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back in Legends Lingo Podcast, episode 265. As always, presented by StudentUnionSports.com. Make sure to check out everything on StudentUnionSports.com, from the daily blogs and all the podcasts and everything else in between. March Madness is here, so make sure that you are listening to the Student Union boys and girls all over the website as they put out their March Madness picks. Like the Chasers guys, they're going to be putting out picks every day. I'm sure they're going to have a ton of picks for the tournament. And Maddie Burnett is booing them. I don't know why, but maybe that's something that he can
just do.
Okay, just to annoy Chris Jones and Tom Sampson. Okay, just making sure that's out there. Cool. Remember, guys, he did it, not me. You can't yell at me for this one. Not this one. Al Mahegan here. As you just heard, Maddie Burnett is here.
Well, yeah, I'm here, queer, and in the clear. Hell yeah.
Maddie, all seriousness.
I wanted to catch you off guard with that, Al.
You did. In all seriousness, how is the voice?
Oh, I mean, I'm recovering from first time ever losing my voice and my first ever sinus infection, which at age 27, everyone's been like, how the hell did you go 27 years without dealing with that? And my answer is I never went outside. So I just stayed inside a lot. Well, actually, no, as a kid, I was outside a lot, but stranger danger, I don't go near people. So that's why I like to write and stuff, because I don't have to deal with, like, physically talking to them. I can just shoot them a message. Sarah knows the amount of times I blow up her notifications about article ideas.
Maddie just doesn't know how to open up and introduce a guest. He's terrible at it, and he just blew it. So guess what? I'm going to do it and show you how it's done, knucklehead. So we are continuing on with our Women in History Month as we are bringing on female guests for the entire month of March. Obviously, 2 weeks ago, we had Noah Dalzell from SB Nation. Last week, we had Lauren Campbell from Mass Live. Make sure to go back and check out those episodes if you have not yet, all over the podcast platforms. This week, we have Musket Fire Patriots editor Sarah Marshall joining us this week. Sarah, first of all, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
At any time. So my first question, how is Maddie Burnett as a writer? I'm just going to put it right on the spot. Please don't hold back, because he sends me his articles all the time. He's always like, oh, you know, you got to read them. Like, oh, take a look at them. Did I do okay? Did I write this okay? And
sorry, I want like an opinion, Al. Like, Jesus God.
And you are the editor. You oversee a bunch of different Patriots writers for Musket Fire on Fanside. Again, go check that out. So what is the grade for Maddie Burnett, and what are some strengths and weaknesses?
Oh God,
for Maddie.
Oh geez.
Remember how many views I have right now, Sarah. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, you're having a good month. I think it's your best month.
Second best.
Wow.
I would say, I mean, I'm not going to get into super specifics, but I think that
Sarah's about to rip me apart. Oh,
No. I think you've gotten better, like, the more that you've written. And I think that, like, the more familiar kind of, like, how with how we do things at Musket Fire, I would say, I think you've gotten better, because Musket Fire and Fanside in general is kind of an interesting blend of writers, I would say, because we're technically like a blog site, but it's not, you know, some people treat a blog like a diary or something, and it's not like that. So I think that you've adapted and you've gotten a lot better. So like, I appreciate that, obviously, because it's like you can try and help people out and they can take your feedback or they don't have to. And I feel like you have taken it. So like, I think that you've improved, which that's good.
Aw, thanks, Sarah. This is why you're my favorite editor at Musket Fire.
Well, I'm the only one, so.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say, there's the punchline there.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go, Maddie, with you're my favorite editor ever. Because don't forget, I was once your editor, too.
I know. Al, I didn't feel like making you self-conscious of your editing skills.
Oh, listen, I know that I sucked. It's okay. That's why I don't do it.
I mean, to be fair, the only reason why I joined Musket Fire, I knew Sarah was there, and I was like, all right, like, I know she's read my stuff before, so I was like, let me join. I've been trying to join
for a long time.
And I was like, you know what? I'm finally going to actually do it.
Good. And you know what, Maddie? I don't give you compliments too often, but I'll give you one
really,
here.
You really don't.
I don't. But
on one hand, I can count how many you've given this year.
Wow, that's not a lot. I need to do better about that. So here's a compliment. I will agree with Sarah ever since I've known you, since I think I've known you pretty much since COVID started, right? So three, four years now?
2020. That's when I joined CGS.
Okay. So ever since your days at CGS, and granted, you had like five different hats at CGS, so I'm going to cut you a little bit of slack here. Your writing has gotten significantly better. And you always said, like, I stink at writing. Like, I can't really write. I'm like, just write, and then we'll take care of the rest. And you did. You have good thoughts. You just got to make sure that you know, dot your I's and cross your T's, and then we call it a day.
That's what Grammarly's for, because Sarah and I went to war about me having it. And then I finally said, all right, I'll have it.
Yep. Well, I'm like that with everybody, though, because it makes their life so much easier, you know, because it's like, I don't want to like expose everything, but
just expose it. I'll just do it.
No, you come after me.
It's all right.
No. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, you know, when they're talking to you about being an editor, it's like, okay, we don't want you to spend like 45 minutes on an article. You know what I mean? So it's like, technically, I could be way harsher and be like, if someone had told me, if you see three mistakes, you send it back, you stop editing, you send it back and tell them to fix it. I haven't gotten to that level yet. So I'm like trying to emphasize, like, use Grammarly, guys, because it's kind of like a cheat sheet in a way of editing, you know, and it just makes it so much easier for me because people will submit like a 2000 word article and it's like 11 at night. I'm like, I don't want to have to go over every single teeny tiny thing here, but Grammarly is a lifesaver. So that's why I'm like, you're getting it.
So, yeah. So Maddie just texted me saying, F you for asking this. He texted me 3 minutes ago.
I thought Sarah was going to expose me. I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
No, obviously not. She's being diplomatic, and we respect that, and we appreciate that. And I meant every word I said, too. I meant that you have seriously done a great job in your past 3-4 years. And I think if you wanted to pursue it full time, I think you could do it. I really do.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. That's the dream. One day.
One day. So again,
I don't want to be a pilgrim for the rest of my life.
So. Yeah, I don't think anybody wants that, pal. Trust
me. Sarah's smirking because she knows what it's like. she knows what I'm talking about.
Gosh. Again, we have Sarah Marshall from FanSided, Patriots editor of Musket Fire, on with us tonight. Before we get into all the Patriots things, I have a little bit of an opening take that's a little bit off topic. So for anybody that's on the interwebs and anyone that's on X, and I'm going to call it Twitter because I don't care, and I'm going to continue to say that.
Well, that's the right thing to call it.
But, so on Twitter today, former Legends Lingo guest Jared Carabas announced that the Section 10 podcast is back. He is a part of Underdog Fantasy now, and it is him, another former guest, Steve Peralt, Jay Yazzie, another former guest, who is the editor. Who else? Coley Mick and future Legends Lingo guest, Tyler Milliken. We're going to get Milliken on. I know we're going to get his.
Just tell me when to ask him. I'll ask him again.
We'll get him during baseball season. That'll be the best time to do it. But it came back today, and I was driving home from work, and I kind of had this epiphany. The Section 10 podcast coming back is one of the best things to ever happen to me personally, because one, that's how Powder and I connected. We connected through the Section 10 podcast. I introduced him to it. I told him, hey, I think you'll really like this. And he got into it. And then that's how this whole podcast started. Section 10 was our inspiration to be like, you know what? They're just having fun and you know, shooting the shit and everything. Like, we can do that too. And now 265 episodes later, I'm proud of the product we've had. We've had many episodes, different third chairs. I mean, going through all the third chairs. We've had Fiesta. We've had Maddie DeRozier. We obviously now have Maddie Burnett. And we've had our ups and downs and everything else. We've had great guests come on with us. And it's amazing to always get this opportunity every Wednesday to talk about and just give our opinions on Boston sports. It's been great. And just seeing Section 10 back after 2 years of an absence, it just kind of like brought back a key part of my podcasting experience and just listening to podcasts. Like, Section 10 is one of the first podcasts I listened to kind of religiously. So it's just a little thing that I was thinking about, and I knew I wanted to talk about it on the pod. And again, I'm thankful to Jared Carabas and Coley Mick and all those guys, because if it wasn't for them making a podcast, Powder and I never would have gotten started with this project. And it continues to be a project, and it continues to be a fun project. So again, shout out to the Section 10 guys. Glad that Jared got his podcast name back. Glad they got Section 10 back, and I'm glad they're back and doing it. I was listening to the first hour, and there's still like 2 hours left. So I can't wait to listen to it. So again, just wanted to kind of throw that out there. I know I'm rambling. I'm done with this, but we'll table it there for now. Maybe we'll have those guys back on in the future, but we'll see. All right, enough of that sappy crap. Let's get into the actual Boston sports talk. So obviously Sarah's here with us. Again, she's Patriots editor for Musket Fire via FanSided. So let's get into the Patriots stuff. Let's start with the dynasty, because I know, Maddie, you finished it now, right? So you're all done with it.
I have done my service and done all 10.
You've done all 10. I've done all 10. Sarah, I know we talked off air. You have watched the first 2 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you plan on watching the last 8?
I want to, because I want to form my own opinion. You know, everyone has already said their piece, and I think it's kind of few and far between. And they're on opposite ends of the spectrum, really. People either think it was pretty bad, or people were like, this was great. So I'm like, I kind of want to see how I feel about it. Unfortunately, I'll have those people's opinions at the back of my mind now. But I still want to, because I enjoy this type of stuff, you know, like a documentary. So
yeah,
I will eventually, I'm sure.
No, of course. And I mean, it's completely understandable. I know you're a huge Patriots fan, just like Maddie and I are, just like Powder is. Powder's not here tonight, folks. Just FYI, I should have announced at the top of the show. He had some work obligations he had to take care of. He will be back next episode, hopefully. So we will hopefully see him next week. But anyways, the end of the dynasty, and Maddie, I know I'm kind of talking more to you because, again, Sarah, you haven't seen the episodes yet, but obviously...
We'll try to be spoiler-free as much as we can.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sarah. I'm probably going to do a lot of spoilers. So I'm apologizing in advance.
That's fine.
So episodes 9 and 10 concluded the documentary, and this was my big takeaway, and this was something that I put in our fantasy football group chat. Didn't go over well, but I'm still going to stick with it, and that's fine with me. Bill Belichick in this documentary, granted, a lot of people are saying it's a hit piece against Belichick, you know, it's making Belichick look terrible. And in some instances, yes, it does make Belichick look bad. And some of it is unfair, because obviously he won 6 Super Bowls as a head coach. And this is one spoiler, Sarah, sorry, that I'm going to give. But in episode 9, they detail the Rams game plan for that Super Bowl 53. And it makes Belichick look like a genius. It does. But people need to realize that Belichick isn't scot-free here. And that's the part that really aggravates me. I would have liked to, and I'm going to stick with this, and I don't care about anybody else. I think this was a great opportunity for Bill Belichick to have the capability to speak out about some things that were brought against him. I think he could have made himself look a little better by answering some of those tough questions. And then, you know what? People would have been like, fine, we don't like the answer, but guess what? At least he answered the question. So stuff about like Spygate and Deflategate and Malcolm Butler's benching and, you know, kind of these other questions, you know, he basically pleads the fifth on them. And that's, I don't care how it sounds, people want answers in these documentaries. That's why these documentaries are made. So I wanted to see, I would have just liked a little bit more from Belichick. Just answer those tough questions. Give us a little crumb, a little nugget. Give us something. You don't have to go into how like Robert Kraft has been or even how Brady was, but just give us a little something. That was the only big thing that I would have liked to see. But overall, I think they missed parts that should have been included. But, you know, still watch it. I mean, grade-wise, I give it like a CC-. I think it wasn't that great, but... still, there was some good stuff in there, so I can't really say too much more about it. Maddie, I do want to hear your thoughts, and then Sarah, obviously, again, include anything that you've heard or anything that you know want to, obviously, please do. But Maddie, your overall thoughts on the last 2 episodes and kind of the whole documentary, just now that it's done in its entirety.
Yeah, I personally think the one thing that really annoyed me is the comparison that this documentary had to The Man in the Arena, the one that ESPN did just strictly on Brady. Well, yeah, of course that one's going to be a little bit more detail-oriented when it's about one player's like career and all that. Another thing that I think they missed out on was Brady's last ever game with the Patriots. They kind of just like they did what they did with the two Super Bowls. They just glossed over it and just immediately like, all right, yep, they won the Super Bowl following season. Yep, they lost. All right, now all of a sudden Tom Brady is a buck. All right, cool. When it comes to like the Belichick stuff, I mean, everyone knows he's a reserved person. He's very just, that's how he sounds, and he just doesn't like to give detail. So even I think even if the producers were telling him, like, you can say whatever you want, Bill, I still feel like Belichick's gonna have like the wall that he always has when it comes to like talking to the media and stuff like that for the rest of, you know, his life, and then he ends up going into media and stuff like that too. I just still feel like he'll open up more, but he won't open up about himself. And like I said, too, every film, no matter what kind of film it is, needs like a hero and a villain. Where like I'm going to put hero in quotes for this specific one, but there needs to be a villain of some kind, someone who is the, you know, the protagonist, antagonist, and really like the villains of this move of the documentary were both Bill Belichick and Ernie Adams. They were. The fact that both of them would not talk about Deflategate Spygate, when there is there's still a good amount of unanswered questions there. And then Spygate, and then Deflategate, I'm getting all my gates confused. Deflategate is, like, again, there's way more that could have been answered, even by Belichick himself. And then with the whole Malcolm Butler thing, Butler even confirming, he's like, I don't know why the hell I got benched in that game. It's just like, what happened to the point where Belichick still to this day doesn't want to talk about it? It just seems like it's just too personal, which is not like Belichick either. So it's like, man, what the hell happened? And we'll never know, because even Butler admitted it. Sorry, Sarah, spoilers, but he doesn't even know either.
So with that, and sorry for the long pause, but my mic was muted and I couldn't unmute it in time. I think we all can agree that Tom Brady in this documentary, I think he had the perfect combination of, he answered some tough questions, but at the same time, he still, when push came to shove, there were some instances where he's like, yeah, I'm going to keep that part private. I think he had a good kind of combination of both. I think Robert Kraft, and this is something that I said on my other podcast, Tuck Rule Takes. I respect Robert Kraft for actually coming out and giving us some new bits of information. And again, I'm going to, you know, a couple spoilers here, Sarah, sorry. But like, he tells us about what he heard about the Malcolm Butler benching. He tells us that he truly thinks that if Belichick wasn't the coach anymore in New England, that Brady still would have stayed and would have finished his career in New England. Like, what owner says that? Like, what owner will come out and just flat out say that? And obviously, like, all the Aaron Hernandez stuff, granted, like, you know, Kraft's like, oh, you know, I really trusted Aaron, but then he did this, blah, blah, blah. But at least he was honest, and at least, like, he gave us some stuff. You know what I mean? That's what I want in my ideal documentary. Give us new bits of information we haven't heard of before. Give us new tidbits that we didn't have to put the puzzle pieces together before. So, Sarah, I don't know if you wanted to kind of chime in here and just anything that you think about the documentary or anything that you would like to see in these next 8 episodes. And we won't tell you whether they're there or not, but just anything else that you might like to kind of see this documentary portray, so to speak.
I think just based off of what I've seen and heard and read and whatnot, it feels to me that they were trying to fit too much in. And maybe it's because there was only 10 episodes that they were doing, but I feel like they were, you know, when they were first introducing or teasing that this was coming, it was so much focus on, okay, we want to see what led to the dynasty. Like, what did they do and how did they accomplish this, especially over 2 decades? And then you start watching it and you see these things, but then it's like we're trying to dive into like so many different aspects that didn't necessarily play like a huge part in what they were doing. So I feel like they either should have expanded it and made it like 15 episodes or something, because people would have watched that, make it a multi-season thing. Like, Patriots fans would watch that. They'd eat it up if you got more details, more answers, like you were saying, you know, maybe a whole episode dedicated to a certain Super Bowl, and then we got one for each one or something, you know what I mean? Like, I think that if they had either just expanded it or maybe even focused solely on just what went into preparing for these games and how they won these games and these Super Bowls, and that might have been a little bit better. Because now, you know, from what we see, it's like, let's talk about the Drew Bledsoe stuff, let's talk about this first Super Bowl, but then let's kind of gloss over these other ones, and then we'll go back to this, and let's talk about Aaron Hernandez, and then the drama with Bill Belichick and Kraft and Brady. It's like, it's a lot, and it all is relevant, but I feel like we were kind of sold something different than what we got, just based off of my impressions, obviously. And I feel like it's hard to cram two decades of like unprecedented success and into 10 episodes, and then giving enough time to the stuff that people want to know, but also needs to be talked about, if that makes sense.
Makes all the sense in the world to me. It really does, because again, and you mentioned this, and that's exactly the order it goes in, right? It goes the Bledsoe years, doesn't even talk about Super Bowls 38 and 39. Then it goes from, you know, from the glossing over the Super Bowls right into Spygate. And then, you know, you talk about 07, which obviously pissed us all off. Then you go from 07 to like the forgotten about years. Like they talked about like 2008, which like you can briefly gloss over it. But that's a section that should have gotten briefly glossed over. Like talk about 2008 for maybe like 5-10 minutes and then move on. But then it goes obviously into, you know, goes into Hernandez, and then it goes into the Deflategate. Like, I think it would have been better off if this documentary was 20 episodes long.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would have gotten, you could have done one episode on, you could have done one on Drew Bledsoe. You could have done one, honestly, you probably could have done it by each of the years that Brady was there and Belichick and them were there. Start in 2001 and do 2001, 2002. Make your way all the way through. And if there's a forgotten season, like 2005 or something like that, then just combine and make it shorter. Make it 15 episodes. I think having like 5 more episodes in this documentary could have really given more attention to the parts that were really badly missed in the actual 10-episode documentary. So I think in conclusion, again, and you guys can obviously throw in anything else that I miss here, a good documentary, but I think they could have made it better. I really think that this had the potential to really be like one of the best documentaries of all time. But I think they missed the mark just a little bit in when it's all said and done. Anybody opposed, or anybody want to throw anything else out there?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. The one thing though that like just came out from what Devin McCourty said and other players, they said they felt duped.
Yeah.
McCourty admitted there's 5 hours of him just talking, and they only used the negative stuff that he said. And I'm just thinking like, man, what else did he say now? Like, what were the positives that he said? It's like, I'd love to see the, like the stuff that they didn't include.
And then they also included people who didn't really contribute much to the dynasty in general. It's like, okay, this guy's here and he played one season for the Patriots. Like, why are we focusing on him, or why is he, you know, throughout all these episodes? Like, I think that's kind of weird too, but yeah. I think, I don't know. I don't know if there was an agenda, because that's a thing that's going around that Kraft was so involved that he was trying to make himself look good. I think it's just Kraft, Brady, and Belichick are all so different with their personalities and how they share and what they're willing to share and what they're willing to talk about. So it's not going to be what everybody wants it to be. But I would imagine in like 10 years, we're going to get like a really good documentary, you know, where everybody's already moved on, and it might be, what do they call it? Like the 30 for 30 or whatever. Yeah. Like we're going to get something like that, where maybe that's when we're going to get a lot more. Like once they're more removed from football, you know, or from the dynasty era, that might be when they kind of are willing to go into further detail about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's,
I wish there was more Edelman in it too.
I know.
Barely in it.
Yeah, I think Edelman could have provided some better nuggets for him.
I have a theory as to why he wasn't in it. But go ahead. He probably said way too much positive stuff where they're like, dude, we can't put all this in here.
Probably.
Whereas like Gronk, he's like, oh, I'll easily sound off on this place. And he's in it a lot once he gets into it.
Yeah. Anything else for the documentary, or can we kind of put this in the past now?
Let's move on now.
Yeah, let's move on. So shout out to the Dynasty. If you haven't watched it yet, it's on Apple TV. Go check it out. And if you don't want spoilers, just skip ahead.
Don't listen to us.
Yeah, just don't listen to us. There you go. Just let's lose followers daily and listeners daily. That's perfect. Perfect recipe for success. All right. One thing that is also lacking besides documentaries being made about the Patriots is the Patriots in the present day. So the Patriots are now in the first big wave of free agency is over in the NFL. And I know we talked last week, Powder and I talked last week, and Lauren Campbell talked last week. Calvin Ridley goes to the Tennessee Titans. It was down to the Patriots and the Jaguars. Maddie, obviously, I know, again, we talked about it last week, but I want to give you the opportunity because you weren't here last week. Your overall thoughts in that situation. Sarah, I also want to hear your thoughts, too, on that whole Calvin Ridley to Tennessee situation. So sound off, you two. Go ahead.
I'll let Sarah go first this time. I went first last time.
What a gentleman.
I made a joke, and it was like kind of a joke, but not really a joke, that I said Ridley was officially on my list because I was like, man, you teased us. You dragged us along thinking that you were really going to come here. I kind of feel like the Patriots were never really a place that he wanted to go. I mean, when he's talked about it, he's said that he wanted to return to Jacksonville. That was his number one. And the fact that he only took $1 million more a season to go play in Tennessee than what the Patriots offered, to me, I'm like, he probably never wanted to go to the Patriots. And to an extent, I don't blame him because there are a lot of uncertainties surrounding the Patriots right now. You're not going into it with Bill Belichick as the coach. Tom Brady's no longer the quarterback. You don't know what's going on. It's a first-time head coach. So it's like, I don't blame him for maybe not being as interested. And then, of course, there's the money factor that people were talking about, like taxes. There's no taxes for him in Tennessee. So that plays along with how things were for him in Jacksonville as well. I'm kind of over it. Like, it was exciting. You thought that he was going to be a Patriot, but I feel like the time for him to be a Patriot was probably 2 years ago, like before he was traded. That's probably when they should have gone for it. But you know, he goes in and fits a role, gets to go play with DeAndre Hopkins, I guess. But I mean, it is what it is. I'm glad to know that the Patriots were actually in on him because I think that was a different part than we were expecting. Even if they did have a lot of money to spend, it was nice to see that they actually were willing to give up a good amount of money and they were only $1 million short. but yeah, I don't know how great he's going to be in Tennessee, but like, good luck to you, I guess.
I mean, here's my thing. I feel like even despite if, let's hypothetically just say he took the deal that the Pats were offering, I feel like this still could have been like a Trent Brown situation where he's just not motivated to play. Like, he's on a crappy team. You know, he's getting paid money, sure, but he probably wants more. He's like, all right, I'm not really, like, this sucks being here. I feel like they dodged a bullet in a way where they can now focus on getting a true number one in the draft, which I think that's the route they're going to go. After today, I'm not so sure about who I thought they were going to potentially take at three wide receiver wise. I just feel like this was, they dodged a bullet. So blessings, yeah, guys, that Ridley's not here.
The thing that, and I said this last week, and I'll repeat myself, the thing that encouraged me was the fact that the Patriots got close to the deal, but they actually gave a real contract and they didn't give one of these Bill Belichick BS, like, oh, like, we, here's a contract, but it's for like $8 million to $10 million a year. And it's like, no way, Bill, like, you're not even close. Like, they're close, and they realize they need to upgrade to the position. So this is a question that I'm going to ask both of you. So there were reports that came out today that the Patriots are exploring trade options in the veteran wide receiver market. A couple of big names that have come up have obviously been T. Higgins from the Bengals and Brandon Ayuk from the 49ers. Of course, there's the white whale of Justin Jefferson with the Vikings, but trust me, I know that's not happening. Fingers crossed, exactly, Sarah. You know the vibes. But let me ask you all, let me ask the two of you this. Do you think there is any possibility that T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk, or Justin Jefferson could end up a Patriot before July or before August when training camp starts. Because I'm going to tell you right now, just real quick, I don't see it happening because I think they're so focused on this draft. But part of the problem is, if you're going to do that, that's fine. But then you have to nail the quarterback, you have to nail the receiver, and you have to nail the left tackle or offensive lineman or, you know, however you want to fill the line. You got to nail all three of those. And that's pretty tough to do in one draft. So go ahead.
My guess is if I had to choose of the three, I think T. Higgins or I feel T. Higgins is the most likely. And that's because I think his value has dropped a little bit. People were thinking that it was going to automatically be a first rounder. Patriots aren't giving them number three for T. Higgins. So like they're already eliminated from that. There was rumors, okay, maybe they would want a high second rounder, so that would be number 34. Or some people are even saying, why not give up 68, pick 68, offer a second or third rounder next year, and that might be enough. If that were the route that they could go, I'm on board 1,000%, because that means you can get quarterback at 3, and then you can get a tackle at 34. And then the receivers would be pretty good. You could still get another receiver in the fourth round. They could still get a decent receiver. The class is so deep, you can still get one. To me, it's not that I'm against any of the rookie receivers, of course. Like I just said, it's a deep class, but I think if they're going to go with a rookie quarterback, and even if he sits behind Brissett for a bit, I feel like they still need to bring in another veteran who can be somewhat of a wide receiver one, or at least more of a threat than who they have right now, because throwing a rookie in immediately to then work with a rookie quarterback, it's like the likelihood of that working 100% of the time or looking really smooth is not very high. So I feel like having that veteran backup and knowing that, like, if you bring in T. Higgins, you know what you're going to get from him. So you don't have to worry about that as much as you're going to be sitting there worrying about, okay, what's the rookie quarterback going to do? Is the left tackle going to be okay? Like, imagine having to stress about three of the most important positions on the offense all at the same time because you decided to go the rookie route. So that's why I'm like, I got my fingers crossed that at least one of them lands there. Part of me, because I like Kendrick Bourne, I kind of hope that Brandon Ayuk doesn't come here because that was part of the reason why Bourne wanted out of the 49ers, because he wasn't getting any snaps over Ayuk. So I still have hope for Higgins. And then my fantasy is Justin Jefferson, because I would like die and go to heaven if we got Justin Jefferson. I know it's like the teeniest chance, but if those Vikings really want to trade up, you got ammunition right there.
And not only that, too, just real quick before Manny goes, I mean, the Vikings need a quarterback. They lost Kirk Cousins, and they're going to be rebuilding. Like, I don't care what anybody says. They're going to be a rebuilding franchise, especially in that division where the Lions are taking a step, obviously, in the right direction. The Bears try to load up every year, and they look like they're going to actually try to hopefully be good in the next couple of years. And then you got the Packers that are obviously, they're always just there in the hunt. And Jordan Love looks really good, so they need to compete. And if they're going to try to compete, they need to start from the ground up again. So that's where I'm with you, Sarah. I think if they really want to, and especially if Justin Jefferson doesn't want to re-sign there. Like, if he doesn't want to re-sign for a big contract and play in Minnesota, you might as well try to take advantage of that.
Well, and they have Jordan Addison, who was, like, one of the best receivers out of all the rookies last year. And Jefferson really wanted to stay if Kirk Cousins was staying. Kirk Cousins is not staying now. So I don't know what his mentality is. Of course, there's going to be rumors on that say everything, that he's unhappy, he's happy, whatever. And they can still get a great receiver. As we've said, or I've said multiple times, it is a deep receiver class. So if they're worried about trading away Jefferson and then who are we going to get in return? Well, you already have what looked like a number one guy waiting in the wings, because he did a phenomenal job when Jefferson was injured last year. You can get another guy that's like right behind him, you know, as a rookie. So I feel like they're in a pretty good spot. And it looks like everything to me that they're trying to move up, whether that's with the Patriots or not, I don't know. But if they have their eye on someone that is probably going to go in the top three or the top five, they're going to want to trade up, because, I mean, there's rumors of them liking J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy is sliding up into the top three, top five. They're going to have to make some moves to do that.
Very true. Go ahead, Maddie. Sorry about that.
You're good. I mean, I agree with what Sarah said. As great as it would be to have Ayuk here, that's not going to make Kendrick Bourne happy if all of a sudden the reason why he left is now back here. He's like, God damn it, why did I just sign 3 years and now Ayuk's here? Great, now I'm stuck with him for 3 years. Go get Higgins. Go get him. He's been solid right behind Ja'Marr Chase. We all know what Higgins can do. We've all seen some of the ridiculous catches he makes from, you know, from one of the best quarterbacks of all time, Joe Burrow. Al, shut up. And it's trade the 34th overall. Hell, trade the 68th too. Just do both. God, who cares? There's no way in hell a rookie left tackle, a rookie wide receiver, and a rookie quarterback can all play together in the first year and succeed. That's not how that works.
I would be fine with trading one of the picks, either 34 or 68, in the next year. That's what I would want. Yeah, I don't want them to give up too much this year because the tackle class is deep too, not as deep as the receivers, but it's like I still want them to prioritize that, you know? So like, I mean, they can keep that second rounder, maybe even get like Jordan Morgan or something at that point, then I would be fine with that.
You know, I personally think right now Patriots are going to go wide receiver at 3 because like they can go get a quarterback in the second round. That's going to be there.
But what and quarterback?
I am fearful of who they really like too.
I know. I think that Bo Nix is kind of going under the radar.
It's going to be terrible because he's matched. Stop it. The two of you, stop it.
I do not want to hear Bo Nix as a New England Patriot.
It's going to happen. He's back 2.0. It's going to happen.
I'm not sold on it. It's hard because, you know, there are reports saying they're willing to trade down. There's others that are saying that they're not willing to trade down. I feel like they're kind of in a position where, as great as it would be to trade down, like with the Vikings, for example, that would give them the 11th and 23rd overall picks. That would be great to have two first rounders. But I really would not be shocked if there's a lot of pressure on them already, as it is, obviously. But I would not be shocked if there's even more pressure for them to take a quarterback at 3 and like hit a home run with it. Because, you know, the argument is fair about trading down, but then the assumption is you want to be so good this upcoming season, you don't want to be in the top 5, the top 10 next year. Like, you do not want a top 10 pick next year. Even though that would be great because you have so many people to choose from, you don't want to be bad enough to have a top 10 pick. So, like, if you're going to have the number 3 pick, the highest pick you've had in 30 years, I feel like you got to take a quarterback there. Or you really do feel comfortable with the second tier guys, which is Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. And they have not been on Penix Jr. at all. They've not even, like, met with him. They didn't meet with him at the combine. I don't believe they're attending his pro day. Like, they're not doing anything with him. So, to me, it would be Bo Nix or nobody. And even then, as we get closer to the draft, I wouldn't be shocked if we're seeing Bo Nix kind of like goes maybe into the late of the first round, because there's so many quarterback needy teams at this point. I don't know that you can kind of like rely on these guys falling into the second round unless you're willing to wait for a guy that Maddie likes, Joe Milton. But even then, that's a questionable decision for a lot of people as well. So
yeah, I need the Patriots to stay away from Bo Nix. Like, I've never needed anything more in my life. I don't want Bo Nix here. He would be a Mac Jones 2.0. And listen, I will say this, Sarah. I know that you are similar to me in the sense of give Mac Jones the third year, see how he does. And then in the third year, when he stunk up the joint, it's like, okay, see you later. Gone. And now he's in Jacksonville, and he can go back up Trevor Lawrence, and maybe he'll start one game this year if Jacksonville clinches a playoff spot. Whatever. But if you are so sold, you need to be sold on Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Those are your two guys. Because Caleb Williams is going to go to Chicago. That's obvious. Like, every report in the world is saying it. All the tea leaves are kind of lining up together. So that's gonna happen. And I'm going to say this, and I've been on this, and Maddie knows I've been on this. I want Jaden Daniels. That's the guy I want. Mobile quarterback, played in the SEC, played against better competition, exceeded the competition, won a Heisman, obviously. How do we know that Drake May is not going to turn out to be Mitch Trubisky?
That's what everyone's saying, yeah.
And I know, and it's the perfect comparison, right? They both went to North Carolina. They both did really well at North Carolina. And then look at the career Trubisky had. But taking ahead of Patrick Mahomes, and how's he doing? That's my fear. Like, obviously, you have to take a quarterback, but I personally think Jaden Daniels is a can't-miss prospect, at least right now, with the way that...
Al, I hate to break it to you about Jaden Daniels.
Too. I know.
It sounds like he's Washington-bound.
I know.
Like, it really sounds like it. And I agree with you about Drake May. Like, holy shit, this guy is probably Mitch Trubisky 2.0. And it's like, all right, like, let's not do that. JJ McCarthy, hell no. He's not worth a third overall pick. I don't know why he's skyrocketing like crazy. I don't get it.
It might also be a smokescreen to get people off of other people. You know what I mean?
I hope
so. Especially because, I mean, Harbaugh was saying, like, he should be the first quarterback taken off. And I'm like, okay, we get it. You know, you're from Michigan, but let's calm down a little bit.
Yeah, let's chill out over here. Let's make sure that things are going right. Let's make sure that things aren't going to go haywire like a cat walking through the set. Yeah. You know, so...
This is what she does every time. Every time I'm on camera, she has to make her presence known.
Oh, we
That's
have
all right. Hey, we're pro animal here. We are
pro animal.
Oh, I have That's a dog one... and a cat in here with me. So
there you go. So it's just utopian. About,
Bo Nix, as an Auburn fan, I've seen what he does with poor coaching and all that, or coaching that's either we don't know much about or questionable. The kid sucks unless he has good coaching. It's one or the other. It's not. There's no in between with him. And we don't know what Alex Van Pelt's going to bring as the offensive coordinator of New England, because we haven't seen. And he's going to be with a first-time head coach, too. It's a recipe for disaster if they take Bo Nix.
Yep.
I like Jaden Daniels, too, because I feel like it's somewhat of righting a former wrong with Belichick not taking Lamar Jackson. You know, I know people feel one way or the other about Lamar. I'm a big Lamar fan, and I've loved him since the draft, and I was really bummed that we didn't take him.
Yes, Sarah. Yes.
So, obviously, Jaden is similar to him, but different. I think the main concern with him, of course, is his weight, because he is slim and trim, as they say. So, I think that would be the biggest concern with him is, as a runner, we saw what happened to Cam Newton. You know, Cam Newton is, like, twice the man's size. So, But I do think it would be like if they're really trying to keep up with how the NFL is going, especially at quarterback, then you want to take a guy like Jaden Daniels. He is the mobile dual threat quarterback that everyone is obsessing over right now. And I feel like if Mayo is really trying to create a new identity in New England and kind of just like be like, okay, this is my team, this is my direction, and this is what I want to do, then picking Jaden Daniels feels more not Belichickian than taking Drake May. And I get it, if you're at three and maybe you like Drake May and Jaden Daniels, and Jaden Daniels goes to the Commanders maybe at number two, I wouldn't be mad if they took May, as long as they honestly believe that he can be the guy, because we don't want to have another Mac Jones situation. But it is going to be a tricky thing for them, I think, because if they're all in on one guy and that guy goes ahead of them, then what do you do? Then I'm like, do you entertain the trade down at that point? Because I wouldn't want them to take a quarterback because he was there. And that's kind of what they said with Mac Jones. Like, they knew that they had to take a quarterback at 15. Mac Jones was there, so they took Mac Jones. And it's like, but we don't want to have that happen again, you know? And I would just be concerned if it's like, we're all in on Jaden Daniels and it's Drake May that falls there. And they're like, all right, whatever, we'll take him because we need a quarterback. It's like, I don't know. I don't think that's the best way to start off this Jerod Mayo era.
Again, we're talking with Sarah Marshall, editor of Musket Fire on FanSided. So let me ask you this, Sarah and Maddie. I'm just going to put it to you point blank, and then we're going to go in a little different direction. Say the Patriots keep number three. Who's their pick on draft night? We go back and forth every week. We're going to continue to do that till the draft. Who's the pick?
I see. It's going to be a quarterback. I'm going Jaden. It's going to be stiff competition, I think, because again, we're at that point where everyone's like, okay, the Commanders are going to be in on Jaden. But we're at that point in the offseason leading up to the draft where everyone's like, oh, let's put this out there to get people off of this guy. And let's try and boost up this guy and say, oh, he's really great. And it's like, yeah, because you want people to be looking over there while you're looking over here. And I could see that being exactly what they're doing with Jaden, because Drake May was the favorite to go number two overall forever until like the last 2 weeks. Then it was like, we're Jaden. So I think that, yeah, I think Jaden's going to be the one that falls to three.
Okay. Maddie?
You know, like in 2 weeks from now, like the trend's going to be different again, which is crazy to say. Because that's what draft season is. It's like, all right, who's the current player of the moment, basically? For me, I'm going to go different. I'm going to go very different at three. They're going to address another huge need they need, which is wide receiver. I think they go Malik Nabers from LSU. Here's why. It's not Marvin Harrison Jr. because he's starting to look a little sus. He didn't work out at the combine. And now today was Ohio State's pro day. Didn't work out again. His trainer saying he just needs to rest. It's been since January. How much rest does he need? It's March. Like, we need to see, like, the scouts need to see. We need to see what the hell this kid can do. Like, we know what he can do on the field. But let's see. How does he do, like, conditioning, like, working out and all that? It's that stuff that teams need to see. And if he's just full on skipping all of it, it's like, all of a sudden, Malik Nabers and Ro Odunze are looking kind of more great than Marvin Harrison Jr. Because it's like, what's this kid's work ethic? He might have a poor work ethic and just might be athletically gifted, which is, that doesn't last in the NFL either. So I'm going to go with Malik Nabers right now at three. Because that kid is special as well.
Some people have him higher on their big board than Marvin Harrison Jr. too. It really depends on who you ask. So
the best wide receiver in the draft class.
Yeah, it just depends on who you ask. And that's the thing, too. It's like, it's so subjective because everybody can watch the same film and everybody can look at the same players and they'll come away with completely different impressions about them. So it's like, the draft is always a crapshoot, no matter if you have the first overall pick or you pick last. Like, you could get, like, look at the Tom Brady situation. No one thought, oh, Tom Brady's going to go first overall, you know, and look at how beneficial he was to the Patriots and every other quarterback that was picked before him. What did their careers look like? So I think people put a lot of weight into that, but you can actually get, like, a really good player that was maybe a little bit under the radar or not as highly ranked as others, and it feels like that's kind of what's happening with Nabers. Like,
yeah, look at Brock Purdy, too, for example.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's so crazy.
So I'll make this quick.
Didn't see that coming at all with him.
I'm going to make this real quick. Number three overall pick. I'm going to take the guy that Maddie said was athletically gifted. I'm going Marvin Harrison Jr. just because I think he's that gifted and that athletic enough that he would come right in, be the Patriots' number one receiver, take care of a huge need. And if you need Jacoby Brissett to, you know, steady the ship for a year, and then like Sarah said in the second round, you take an offensive tackle, like, I'm okay with that. Especially if you are bad again and you get a chance to go after a quarterback next year. Like, I know Shedeur Sanders will be coming out of Colorado after next year. He's a guy that I love because I think that he's, and I've said this before, he has flashes of Tom Brady in his game, but it's because of like the late game drives. It's because of the decision making. It's because of the accurate passing. It's because he doesn't get sacked. He's smart with the football. Those are the parts that I say he has Tom Brady in him. I'm not saying he's going to win six Super Bowls, but there are pieces. There are pieces that you say, wow, this actually looks like, you know, like Brady's game, so to speak. So again, give me Marvin Harrison Jr. at three. If he's there, I think you got to take him. And I think that you'll see that maybe it's just, you know, maybe something happened with the pro day. I don't know, but guess what? Talent's talent, and talent wins in this league. So you need the talent. So give me Marvin Harrison Jr. at three. Just be a little different.
It'd also be hilarious to see Marvin Harrison like at Patriots games.
I know.
Oh, it'd be hilarious.
I it's kind of one of those things too where I'm like not 100% against them just trying to improve the offense overall, like every position but the quarterback. You know, like if they really don't love whoever falls to them at three, then I'm all for get your receiver, go for your tackle, you know, bulk it up, just do what you got to do, and then bring a rookie in next year. Because Jacoby Brissett had his best season when Alex Van Pelt was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland. So if you're going to stick with him for a season, by all means, do that. And then, you know, if you got to trade up next year, you know, depending on whatever quarterback they like next year, but that's a thing where you have to really like that quarterback. So I'm like not 100% off of that, although it's not like a popular opinion.
That's okay. We love unpopular opinions here. Any final thoughts before we kind of move in a different direction?
Nope.
Let's keep the party rolling.
All right. Before we keep the party rolling, though, we have to talk about our friends at A&B Kitchen and Bar at A&B Burgers. Whether you are heading to the game or you want the big game atmosphere and you're right across from the TD Garden, make sure to check out A&B Kitchen and Burgers, A&B Kitchen and Bar. There are two locations, one in Boston, Massachusetts, the other one in Beverly, Massachusetts, located on the North Shore. They have everything you want, from chicken parm to just pretty much any other meal that you can think of, locally crafted beers, and everything else that you want in a restaurant. Make sure to tell them that the Legends Lingo Boys sent you. Great people, better times, fantastic ownership. And we have to get that idea going that we've been talking about for months, Maddie. We need to make that happen. But that might be a summer project. That's something in the summer we're going to need to get going.
Oh, heck yeah.
I mean, we have the connection. So we can make it happen.
I used to have connections.
Does. That's what this industry is, right? It's all about the people you meet, all about the connections you make.
Exactly.
All right, real quick, we're going to talk about one more thing before we get out of here. Again, speaking with Sarah Marshall of Musket Fire, editor. Make sure to check out all of her stuff at Musket Fire. Make sure to check out her YouTube channel as well, where she talks all things Patriots and WWE and wrestling and everything else. So make sure to go check all that out. Celtics, they continue to be really good. So the Boston Celtics, as we're recording, they are 54-14 on the season. They are in the midst of a six-game winning streak. Just taking a look at the NBA East standings, just because it's so much fun to see how much better the Celtics are than everybody else they played this year. So the Celtics are 54-14. The next team that is behind them in the standings is the team they're actually playing on Wednesday, March 20th, which is the night that we are recording. It is the Milwaukee Bucks, and they are 10 games behind the Celtics in the standings with 14 games to go.
That's insane.
I think it's safe to say the Celtics are going to be the number one seed in the East in the playoffs. So I think that's pretty good. Cavaliers are in third right now with a 43-25 record. New York Knicks in fourth place, a half a game ahead of the Orlando Magic. The Knicks currently stand at 41-27. Magic are 41-28. The 76ers continue their downward slide without Joel Embiid at 38-30. Half a game behind them is the Indiana Pacers at 38-31. The eighth seed belongs to the Celtics' dreaded rival, the Miami Heat, with a 37-31 record. So half a game out of the seventh seed. And then the ninth seed, is the Chicago Bulls at 34-35. And then the 10th seed is the Atlanta Hawks at 30-38. What was that, a pterodactyl?
No, that's like what Shaq does whenever they talk about the Hawks.
Like if you give me a caw-caw, that might have been a little better. I don't know. But
I'm not trying to hurt my vocal cords more than I did today, Al.
That's fair. Okay, so here's my question. It's a little bit different. So we know the Celtics are getting the number one seed. And as of right now, they would either play Indiana, Miami, Chicago, or Atlanta, depending on how the NBA 7-10 tournament, I forget the name of it, not the play-in tournament. What's the official name of the tournament? I always forget.
The play-in tournament.
Oh my God, I'm so dumb. Yes, the play-in tournament. Thank you. The NBA play-in tournament. So for anybody that is unfamiliar again with how the play-in tournament works, 7 seed plays the 8 seed. Winner automatically gets the 7 seed. It faces the 2 seed first round of the playoffs. And then the loser of the 7-8 game plays the winner of the 9-10 game. And then the winner of that second game plays the 8 seed, gets the 8 seed and plays the 1 seed, who in this case is going to be the Celtics. So I'm going to ask you two this. Based on everything you've watched this year, who is the team that you would want to see the Celtics get in the first round of the playoffs?
Oh, easy.
Based on that 4-team. Okay, because we may have a different take there. So
give me Chicago. Are you kidding me?
Okay, so you're gonna say Chicago. Why?
Simply because outside of DeMar DeRozan, I can't name anybody on that team. And also for the fact that I think Indiana is still a highly underrated team. Miami, we all know what they do in the playoffs. And then in the playoffs, like Trae Young kind of just starts like actually like starting to care about basketball. And so then that just leaves Chicago, which is the crappiest of the four. So why not just get a nice, easy first round series, a quick 4-0 sweep, get ready for round two because you're probably going to have to play. Probably for some stupid reason, I can see us having to get Miami round two. And we all know how that's going to go. It's going to go seven when it shouldn't. It's going to be horrible. They'll either just barely escape or they'll get their ass kicked in game seven. And then if they get to the conference finals, it's probably going to be Milwaukee. And that's just going to be an all-out war.
Okay. So you went a little bit more. I said the first round. You did the full thing. So you, in order, want Chicago, then Miami, then Milwaukee? That's your order?
Give me that.
Okay. Sarah?
I'm not going to go that deep, but I was going to say Chicago as well. I was like, the number one that I wouldn't want is Miami. I don't want Miami at all. I want them to be eliminated before we can even get to them. That would just be the perfect scenario because I see all the trolls online. The Heat fans are absolutely obsessed. I think they're bigger Celtics fans than we are. Like, see them. Yeah, they're holy talking shit, about the Celtics way more. And I'm like, you guys don't realize that the more you talk about a team that you claim to hate, the bigger a fan you look. Like, move on. Get some new material. So, yeah, I would like for them to have just an easy first round. And to me, yeah, I would say Chicago out of all of them because I initially was going to say the Pacers, but they can give them problems. So I don't really feel too comfortable picking them.
Okay. So I'm going to go different than both of you. And you're not going to like the answer. Uh-oh. I want Miami round one.
Oh, God,
here's why I want Miami. Something's different about this team this year. And you know what that difference is? He's a 7'3" Latvian god named Kristaps Porzingis.
Tingis.
Because think about it. What has been the big thing that Miami's done effectively against the Celtics in years past? What have they done?
Rebound. Just be more physical.
True. But what's the big thing? What's the big thing they've done that they talk about every year? You know what?
I don't know. Yeah, like heat culture or some shit. I don't know.
Playing the zone.
Yeah. There we
playing zone defense. And guess what? The Celtics have always had trouble figuring that out. But with Kristaps Porzingis now in the middle of that zone where he can barely shoot a foul line jumper or drive in, or he can just get a post up down low, or he can be a drive and dish, or you pass it to him, it opens up 3-point opportunities for everybody else. I think that changes the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to force guys like Bam Adebayo to have to come up and contest, and then that leaves down low wide open for easy layups and easy dunks. So give me Miami, exercise the demons from last year. And then in round two, and this is as far as I'll go, give me Philly round two. Because especially if Joel Embiid's coming off of injury, I think that Philly, if the season ended right now, I think they could upset Cleveland in the first round. And then if you got me Philly in the second round, I'd be like, you know what? We always beat Philly. They'd have an Embiid that's, you know, first of all, he struggles with his minutes as is. And then second of all, he's coming off a major injury where he's missed a good chunk of the, you know, second half of the season. That would be, knock him on wood. That would be a cakewalk to the Eastern Conference Finals. Then after that, even if you got Milwaukee, like, I love the way the Celtics match up with Milwaukee. Especially, like, yeah, Giannis is Giannis. He's going to get 30 a night. But if you shut down everybody else, I mean, you're not going to lose because you have that many options. Especially with Drew Holiday now, who I've said for the whole year, better version of Marcus Smart, just as, almost as good defensively, way better offensively, consistency-wise. So that's who I want. Give me Miami round one, Philly round two, and then make the chips fall as they lie in the conference championship, in the Eastern Conference championship, should they get there, and they should get there.
I like that because I feel like that is taking out the main teams that people are like, oh, they're not better than the Heat. They're not better than the Sixers. You know, it was like, just take them out one by one by one. And then exactly. No one can say anything. No one could say anything if they went through those three teams, you know? So I would be okay with that.
I would love it. Excuse me. I would love every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
Any other Celtics things you guys want to talk about or anything you want to bring up? Just curious.
I mean, Derek White got his first triple-double the other night.
Shout out D. White. Best
it's like he's such a key piece this year after a certain somebody that looks oddly like a lot like you, Al, who said his first year here, yeah, I could live without him.
I will admit, his first year, I was a little down on him. But then his second year, I was even telling people, like, give him time. He's going to be good. Because then I watched more of it, of his game. Then I was like, you know what? I was wrong about him at first.
I told you, the moment we traded for him, Al, I was like, you're going to be good. Trust me.
The moment he shaved his head, he was a person.
When I knew, I was like, oh, God, we're going to get a brand new Derek White this year. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
He should have been an all-star this year. He should have been one.
I know. Yeah. I'm just happy for him, though, because, you know, his first year was rough. And he was a very underrated, like, underwhelming, I would say, trade. And so when they brought him in, people didn't really care. And then he wasn't really living up to what they were hoping. And then he's just come alive since then. And, you know, he talked about how he feels more comfortable now. I think this was a year ago, but he's saying he feels more comfortable and, like, really a part of the team. So to see him coming alive and getting, like, MVP chance or all-star chance, like, that is really cool to see, especially just to be embraced by the fans. It's not always easy in Boston to be embraced by the fans, and no matter what sport we're talking about. So I just like that because he seems like a really nice guy too.
He's a good dude.
He does. That he does. Real quick, just baseball note real quick. The Red Sox open up next week and nobody cares, and rightfully so.
All right, perfect.
Just wanted to say that. Just wanted to get that.
Perfect. All right, let's end it on that.
Sarah, you have been great. You've been answering all of our questions. We've appreciated your time with us. Do you have any questions for us about really anything? Can be sports, non-sports, anything.
I'm curious about this just because, like, I'm all in on it and it's relevant because of all the rumors swirling about Stephon Gilmore. Do you want to see Stephon Gilmore back in New England? Because I do.
Yes. 100%. Okay. Yes. Him and Gonzo? Yes.
I know, right? I was like, he's always the one that got away, you know, that first love that you're like, oh, man, you know. I hated the way that things ended, and then seeing him go play for three other teams, and he's still just incredible. I'm like, yeah, I don't care that he's 34. Bring that man in. Have him playing alongside Gonzo, Jonathan Jones, like, please, give it to me, you know? And it's like, at this point, you're still going to get solid production from him, and then him being a mentor to a guy like Gonzo, who already was well on his way to being defensive rookie of the year last year, even though it was only 3.5 games. Like, imagine how much better he could get by having Gilmore, like, teach him the ropes even more. I'm like, yes, please. Thank you.
Pro's pro, literally.
Yeah. And you can get him cheap. He's not going to be, you know, coming in from Buffalo the way they originally brought him in on this, like, 50-something million-dollar contract. Like, he's 34 absolutely. Years old. He's still productive, but he's not going to be getting top dollar. So I'm like, please do it. Like, he's already said, he said it a year and a half ago that he wanted to come back to New England. So I'm like, can you just do it? Dallas, he says Dallas is possibly going to give him a contract. They're not doing anything. So swoop in there and get your guy. That's what I want.
Go in there and get him.
But otherwise, I guess I'm just curious, who else do you hope that they sign? Like, if we're talking about realistic free agents, they still have $51 million in cap space, which is insane because, I mean, they've spent about half of what they had originally and it doesn't feel like it. But I feel like there's still some people out there that are going a little bit under the radar that would be, like, kind of an exciting addition, but no one's really talking about it.
I'll say this real quick. It's not going to be an external signing. I hope that they get the extensions done for both Matt Judon and Christian Barmore. It's a square answer, but I think they need to get done. Get them done now while you have the money. And then let everything else kind of take care of itself. Draft well, maybe a free agent or two, but you get those two guys done, then your defense is looking good for the next several years, even better than it already is. So that's my answer.
All right, I guess I have to be realistic. I'm literally looking at the list of free agents. I don't even know who's available.
There's a couple interesting names. I would say it's more so, like, defensively that there are, like, Justin Simmons, I believe, is still available. So, like, adding another safety would be kind of cool. They lost Jaren Mills.
If they miss out on Gilmore or anything like that, I wouldn't mind Xavier Howard. Wouldn't mind him at all. If they want to bother with Jamal Adams, sure.
No, thank you. Absolutely not.
I personally
absolutely not.
But I just see them being stupid and doing that.
A lot of it's all picked over, and it feels like a lot. It feels like they could basically get anybody they want at this point because we're the hype is over, the excitement's over, the frenzy's over. So like, go and get whoever. But it feels like they're just not. They're chilling.
Let's
you know, and I'm like,
Cordero Patterson. Let's bring him back for a year.
That's what I've said. I was like
let's
love
bring him back for a year. Like that would be fun to have him back. Or, I mean, if they want to live up to expectation, go get Hunter Renfro. But they ain't gonna do that.
Yeah, I agree about extending the players too. And unfortunately, they really missed their opportunity to get Barmore locked down before those big, gigantic contracts were given to those defensive tackles. So now they're going to have to deal with it. And it's like, you should probably do it now before those contracts get even bigger, because then you're not going to want to sign him. Might as well do it now. And Judon already said he wants to retire a Patriot. Keep this man here. His linebackers coach from the Ravens is now part of the team. Like, come on, just let him stay.
And on that,
and sign him before training camp so they don't got him through that whole charade again where he just does conditioning and that's it.
Agreed.
And apparently does the conditioning. Like, get him locked down before training camp so he actually participates in it this year.
Yes.
Because the most that man was doing was just throwing the football to the fans and then signing autographs after. Al and I know it because we were there last year. We'll be there again this year.
Yes,
I think that's all he does.
And on that note, make sure to rate, subscribe to the Legends Legal Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, and everywhere else where you can get your podcasts. Make sure to check us out on Twitter at Lingo Legends. Make sure to check out Student Union Sports all across the board on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, everywhere where you can get your Student Union Sports coverage. Sarah, feel free to shout out all your stuff right now.
Oh, yeah. Just go check out everything that we got going on Musket Fire. We've come a long way in the past 2 years. So if you're familiar with the site, please make sure you come back and see how much better it is now. And then, of course, you can follow the Musket Fire YouTube channel, which I am starting and will hopefully be streaming soon. And then I have my own personal channel. If you are into WWE, I'm your girl. So just search Sarah Marshall on YouTube and you should be able to find me.
All right. Well, Sarah, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you guys for having me.
Anytime. For Sarah Marshall, for Maddie Burnett, I am your host, Al Nahegan. Thank you for watching episode 265. Thank you for listening to episode 265. We'll be back next week for episode 266 with a little fun surprise. Stay tuned. Yes, sir.